second case of the morning is number 03-3967, Robert L. Fix against Quantum Industries.
Good morning. My name is Peter B. Bensinger, Jr., and I represent the appellant, Quantum Industrial Partners. Quantum asks this court to reverse the district court and to remand with instruction that the court hold a jury trial to determine the intent of the parties as to the operation of Section 7B of Mr. Fix's employment agreement and the prop definition of change in control. We ask this court to reverse because the district court erred. It did not apply the correct legal standard under Delaware law for contractual ambiguity. The leading case is from the Delaware Supreme Court, Eagle Industries. As to whether a contract is ambiguous, the Delaware Supreme Court instructs, contract terms themselves will be controlling when they establish the party's common meaning so that a reasonable person in the position of either party would have no expectations inconsistent with the contract language. When the provisions in controversy are fairly susceptible of different interpretations, or may have two or more different meanings, there is ambiguity. Then the interpreting court must look beyond the language of the contract to ascertain the party's intention. In addition to this standard for contractual ambiguity, there are two other important principles of Delaware law concerning contract interpretation that the district court did not follow.
If this bankruptcy situation was so important, and I can see it looks like it was important, why wasn't it put in there?
Why wasn't it put into the Section 7B?
Sure. I mean, it certainly wasn't something that was so unlikely here.
Indeed. Your Honor, first, it's undisputed that the parties never actually had a discussion in their negotiations of the contract about what would happen to this equity-based makeup payment in the event of bankruptcy. The person for Outboard Marine who negotiated the deal with Mr. Fix is Frank Sika, an OMC board member. He testified at deposition as to the genesis of this provision, as to its purpose and its intent. And it was to give protection to Mr. Fix in the event that the major shareholders of Outboard Marine were able to cash out their preferred stock before Mr. Fix's common stock options were in the money. This was a turnaround situation. The concept was if the turnaround works and Quantum gets its money out, Mr. Fix is going to be protected, because of the difference between the stock Quantum held, preferred stock, and the stock Mr. Fix held, common stock option. It was possible that Quantum could cash out, and yet Mr. Fix would not have realized the full benefit of his equity upside, his performance incentive. Bankruptcy was in play in the sense that Quantum and the Soros entities were funding Outboard Marine. But at no time did Mr. Fix ever come forward and say in words or substance, I need a guaranteed $5 million payment in the event Outboard Marine goes bankrupt. And Mr. Fix's affidavit, which is an exhibit to his Rule 56 statement, does not say otherwise. It doesn't dispute the testimony of Mr. Sika about the genesis of the provision here in issue. If the parties had discussed what would happen to the equity upside payment in the event of bankruptcy, we wouldn't be here today.
Right.
Presumably, because they have had an opportunity to clarify it.
Sure.
And under the applicable standard in Delaware law...
But these are sophisticated parties, so why wouldn't you put something... You're bringing him in to turn the company around.
Right.
Didn't turn around, it went bankrupt.
Right.
And then you look to the agreement, and there's nothing there that speaks to what will happen in the event of a bankruptcy.
Your Honor, I do think there's something there that speaks to this issue, albeit not explicitly in the context of bankruptcy. There is a severance provision in Section 12 which says that the company has the right to terminate Mr. Fix at any time and for any reason. But if the company does so, he's entitled to severance payments. In this case, Mr. Fix received his severance payments in excess of $1 million. The problem we really face is one of context, and the error that the district court committed was to take the phrase in the prop definition of change in control out of context and interpret it in a vacuum without considering the entirety of the agreement or the purpose of prop, the intent of the personal rewards and opportunities program. Here, the definition of change in control had two components, the prop definition and the any sale definition. The district court granted summary judgment based on the prop definition. And we submit that this prop definition is entirely inconsistent with the concept of bankruptcy. I want to read from the first paragraph of the Personal Rewards and Opportunities Program, which is the document from which the definition of change in control is taken. And it reads, "The Personal Rewards and Opportunities Program is designed to recognize and reward through cash bonuses, stock options, and other equity-based awards, the personal contributions and achievements of key employees, both individually and as members of the management and key employee team, in building the value of Outboard Marine Corporation. Prop is the start of an exciting new partnership between the company's key employees and shareholders to ambitiously and dramatically grow and develop the value of the underlying businesses of the company and to mutually share in the success of those efforts."
Are you saying, in effect, that the severance, which you say is $1 million, was all that it took to entice Mr. Fix to leave wherever he was before, to take on what I would say is at least a risk to turn around a company? He must be a turnaround guy or something. He must have had some attraction to bring him in from the outside. One could argue that the $5 million was a risk that alleviated that and that got him there. You're saying the $1 million, whatever, severance, was all it took to get him on board. Is that...
I'm not saying that.
Well, I guess I'm asking that.
Yeah, Your Honor, first, I'm saying that to the extent Fix argues that the $5 million is a requirement for him to leave his other job and come in and take on this assignment, he never said that in any of the negotiations. We have in our brief an explicit deposition clip wherein we asked this question. Mr. Fix never came forward and said, "Look, I'm leaving a good job, I'm taking on a tough assignment, and if Outboard Marine goes bankrupt, I need protection. I want that $5 million payment as an enticement to come here." He never had that discussion, not even close. All the parties did discuss in the context of this makeup payment is the concept that if the turnaround succeeded, he'd have equity upside. And because of the stock structure, he'd be protected in the event that Quantum cashed out before he realized the full benefit of his stock options. So I would answer by saying, surely the severance provision was a factor. If he was fired, he was guaranteed $1.3 million. In addition, he had an upside opportunity if the turnaround worked to make real money.
Did they treat him as being fired and therefore he got the million?
He was terminated before the closing on the sale of assets in bankruptcy. He has been paid all of the severance to which he is entitled. Your Honors, if Mr. Fix's interpretation is correct, it creates perverse economic incentives. You bring in an executive to turn around the company. You pay him $450,000 a year. And yet, if the company goes belly up, he's guaranteed immediately 10 times his salary. That makes no economic sense. A reasonable person in the position of the parties could have an expectation that Fix is not guaranteed $5 million if the company goes bankrupt and the equity is utterly worthless. I have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Banksinger. We'll hear now from Mr. Tebbett.
May it please the Court, my name is Cesar Tebbett. With me is Karina DeHaze and the plaintiff appellee, Roger Fix. Your Honors, I would like to split my comments into two categories. The first relating to the literal language in the contract at issue, and the second relating to the context of the negotiations if the Court determines that we need to reach context. With respect to context, the record in this case is much different than Quantum represents in its brief and today in oral argument, and I'd like to get to that secondarily. First, with respect to the language in the contract is crystal clear, as Judge St. Eve determined. The contract contains two specific definitions for a change of control. The contract also says, at Section 24, Quantum shall guarantee all payments, specifically including change in control payments. Obviously, the reason for a guarantee is because OMC was in difficult financial condition. There was a possibility that it would not survive. That is the purpose for a guarantee. The guarantee is directly from Quantum to Mr. Fix, and it guarantees all payments, specifically including the change in control payment. The contract also contains two definitions for a change of control. The first is when the board approves the sale of all or substantially all assets. The second is, apart from board approval, when there is, quote, any sale, end quote, of all or substantially all assets. There's no question that the language does not in any way exclude a sale in bankruptcy or board approval of a sale of bankruptcy. But even if it did, the board action on December 22, 2000, as reflected in the written minutes of the board, expressly approved the sale of all or substantially all assets in bankruptcy or outside of bankruptcy. The minutes of the board expressly state, we approve the sale of all or substantially all assets of Outboard Marine under the bankruptcy laws or other applicable laws. Judge Evans asked a question of Quantum with respect to why the contract didn't specifically contain a provision regarding bankruptcy. And we believe, Your Honor, that the reason is set forth in the undisputed facts and the circumstances of the case. The parties at no time sought to set forth an exhaustive or unexhaustive list of all the contingencies or possibilities that might be covered under a change of control. If they sought to do that, it would be impossible because there were innumerable consequences that could fall within a change of control. Instead, they chose to use all-encompassing language.
It's pretty odd, though, to bring somebody in to turn around a company and a short time later it goes bankrupt and get $5 million in addition to a fairly generous severance.
Well, Your Honor, the undisputed fact...
Sometimes people make bad contracts and they have to live with them, but that does seem a lot.
Two responses, Your Honor, to that observation. The first is that the contract is clear. It contains an integration clause under Delaware law. The court should confine itself to the literal interpretation to avoid these kinds of disputes and these uncertainties. The parties specifically bargained for a contract with an integration clause so that they could have certainty and predictability in their business dealings. Everyone was represented by counsel. There were enormously high stakes involved. But if we go beyond the context is set forth in the undisputed record. It was before Judge St. Eve. And the context is that Outboard Marine, in the first 6 months of 2000, was a sinking ship. It was losing hundreds of millions of dollars. George Soros and his entities were the controlling shareholders. They needed Roger Fix to come in and try to turn it around. Roger Fix came in, this is all undisputed, and negotiated his contract. He had a first conversation or an initial conversation with Frank Sica. Mr. Sica could not recall the vast majority of what occurred during that conversation, other than a vague reference to preferred. There's no conversation about the guarantee, no conversation about specific change of control. That testimony is set forth in the appendix to Quantum's brief. Absolutely complete failure of recollection with Mr. Sica. But it's undisputed that after that initial conversation, the lawyers got involved and the parties, and there were drafts negotiated back and forth, many drafts, and at the conclusion of that process with many lawyers, Kirkland and Ellis, the general counsel for Outboard Marine, counsel for Roger Fix, and corporate counsel for the Soros entities, the parties signed a final integrated contract. The reason why there's a $5 million change of control payment in there is because Roger Fix was induced to leave his long-term employment at John Crane with substantial long-term benefits, including retirement benefits and long-term bonus benefits, in the amount of $4 million present value, it's undisputed, and come over to Upward Marine to a...
It's undisputed, but there's nothing in the contract that refers to that, obviously. Otherwise, that wouldn't be a problem. This seems to be maybe that was the intent, but it wasn't put in the contract, but inadvertently this other provision covers that. I'm not sure how to construe it. We look at the contract, but what you just point out makes sense if it's all written out or if we know that fact. They say that severance covered that.
Well, Your Honor, what the severance covered was 3 years' base salary that would be payable monthly for a three-year period in return for a substantial two-year non-compete and other matters. That's spelled out in the contract.
Okay.
What also is spelled out in the contract is that Roger Fix is entitled to a $5 million payment or the value of his stock options, whichever is greater, upon the occurrence of a change in control. And change in control is defined as broadly as possible, with only two exclusions. One is for an initial public offering, and the other is for any circumstance, this is the definition under prop, where the board of directors determines that the event did not constitute a change of control. Here the board of directors never determined that their approval of the sale of substantial all assets did not constitute a change of control. Again, there are two specific definitions of a change of control. One is under the prop definition. The other is any sale. Under the prop definition, there were two exclusions, one for an initial public offering, the other for any event that the board determined would not constitute a change. The board had to do that 30 days before the change of control event. Here, the board of directors never determined that their approval of the sale of all assets or substantially all assets did not constitute a change of control. And the reason for it, if we consider context, and again, I think, Your Honor, we should not consider context in this case. This case screams for a literal interpretation of the plain language. So business people with sophisticated lawyers and sophisticated parties with a lot of money at stake can rely on the language of their agreements. But if we consider context, Outboard Marine in November and December 2000, 6 months after Roger Fix began, said the Quantum Group, the Soros Group, will not fund this sinking ship anymore. That effectively killed any chance for a turnaround. At that moment, the Quantum Group, the Soros Group, controlling the board of directors, determined that the company should sell all or substantially all of its assets. They could have at that time said to Roger Fix, our approval of the sale does not constitute a change of control. But if they did it to him, he would not be obligated to stay on, fire 5,000 people, have a bankruptcy on his resume as a chief executive officer of United States corporations trying to get another job, wouldn't have to travel around the world and sell the assets for $90 million. If they had at any time, under the meaning of prop, determined that their approval did not constitute a change of control, Roger Fix would not be obligated to do that. Under that circumstance, he could have taken his severance because he would have been either terminated without cause or he would have terminated for good cause and left and jumped off of that sinking ship like many other people did. But he stayed on because under the definition of prop, there was a change of control when the board approved the sale of substantially all assets. That's what happened in terms of the context and the undisputed facts. I'd also point out that in this case, the extrinsic evidence that Quantum relies on is an isolated passage from the deposition of Frank Spica regarding an early meeting with Roger Fix when they were trying to recruit him. It's undisputed that after that early meeting, there were substantial additional negotiations with many drafts that were exchanged, and that finally, at the conclusion of those meetings, a final written contract was executed. One final point, Your Honor, I notice that my light is on, if I may. With respect to the alternative definition in the Roger Fix's written, fully integrated contract, it defines a change of control as, quote, any sale, end quote. And as this court has said in other contexts, any means any and all means all. And we interpret contracts clearly according to their plain language, especially when they're between sophisticated parties who are fully represented. Judge St. Eve did not reach that alternative definition. She determined that she didn't have to because the board approved the sale in December, either in or outside of bankruptcy. But that alternative definition provides an alternative basis, Your Honor. There is a difference in the agreements between board approval of a sale, which happens first, and then a sale, and then a closing or consummation of the sale. The prop definition contains a difference between an event and a consummation of an event. And bankruptcy law provides that when a court enters a sale order, in this case, the sale is final according to its terms. The sale has occurred. It's just that the closing will occur at some later date. That's the difference between, as Black's Law Dictionary says, an absolute sale and a sale conditioned on a future closing. So on that alternative basis, we also, Your Honor, would ask that the court affirm.
Thank you, Your Honor. How much time do you have? Mr. Bissinger, you have 5 minutes left.
Your Honors, the appellee's argument affords me an opportunity to address the second fundamental way in which the district court erred. Quantum is the non-movement. Therefore, to the extent this court considers extrinsic evidence and gets into a factual inquiry, it is Quantum that is entitled to have all inferences resolved in its favor. Therefore, when we start to look at the question of what the board did and whether the board should have held a vote that the resolution approving the sale of bankruptcy should be deemed to be not a change of control, that is extrinsic evidence. That is factual inquiry. When we get into why did Roger Fix leave his prior job, that is a fact question. Once we're into those facts questions, it is Quantum that is entitled to have all inferences resolved in its favor. The district court, however, did not do that. Instead, the district court resolved inferences adverse to Quantum. Let me here draw an important distinction for the court. When we speak of extrinsic evidence, that is something Quantum submits is different from talking about a provision in context. When we say, under Delaware law, the court should not consider a provision in a vacuum, what we mean is you consider the provision in the context of the written agreement taken as a whole. That is black letter law. Considering the agreement taken as a whole is not consideration of extrinsic evidence. We're not looking at witness testimony about their intent. We're not trying to imagine why the board did one thing or another. What Quantum is saying is under Delaware law, when you look at a specific sentence in a contract, you do not look at that sentence in a vacuum. You consider the entirety of the agreement taken as a whole. Fundamental principle of law. The district court appears to have been confused in its opinion and appears to have believed Quantum was inviting the court to consider extrinsic evidence because Quantum was saying you can't take this one sentence and view it in a vacuum. And I believe appellee's argument indicated this confusion. So I wanted to be clear in rebuttal that when Quantum says you must construe the provision in context, Quantum is not talking about extrinsic evidence. To the extent the court considers extrinsic evidence, Frank Sita's testimony is the only record testimony about what the principals discussed in negotiating 7B of the contract. And Frank Sita's testimony about the purpose and intent of 7B stands undisputed. Mr. Fix did not, in his affidavit, say Frank Sita was wrong. That is a fact issue. If the court reaches that extrinsic evidence, then Quantum is entitled to the inferences. Quantum is entitled to go to the jury on that question. The fundamental point here is that when you apply Delaware law on contractual ambiguity, the person in the reasonable position of OMC could have had an expectation inconsistent with the proposition that these parties gave Mr. Fix a perverse economic
Delaware incentive. Is Delaware law at all idiosyncratic in this respect, or does it follow general contract principles?
Your Honor, I don't know the specific answer to that question because I haven't done the comparison. It is my belief that the fundamental principle that when you construe a contract, you read a particular provision in context is true in many, many jurisdictions. It is also my understanding that for contractual ambiguity, the issue is whether a party, a reasonable party, a third party, could have an expectation inconsistent with the contract language, and that were, therefore Delaware is not unique. In my remaining time, I want to address the any sale issue. The district court did not grant Fix relief based on this second alternative definition. The district court found that Quantum was correct as to the timing and sequence of events. Mr. Fix was terminated before the closing on the sale of assets. In our reply brief, we explain that the bankruptcy court's order of February 9 approving the purchase agreement is not the sale itself, and we distinguish his authority. Indeed, the bankruptcy court's order makes clear the sale was still contingent upon the closing, and therefore, this court should remand with instruction that the court hold a jury trial only on intent of the parties as to the prop definition and not the any sale definition. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pitts. Ben Finger. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.